Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today I'm joined by Gareth Evans. He is the founder and the CEO of Vectra, an energy transition platform for commercial and industrial customers. Glad to have Gareth on the show today. Gareth, welcome to the show. Great to meet you.
Ted, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Good, good. And where are you sitting as we speak? I think you're in San Diego, but tell me.
I am. I am sat right here near you in San Diego.
Very good. And we are here. We are in Southern California, and boy, the winter storm whipping across the country. I was just on a call with colleagues in Indiana, where it's going to be 4 degrees in a couple of days. So
we were in Calgary last week visiting my wife's family, and it was a very mild winter, but I think they're also being smashed with that winter storm, and I'm glad I'm not there this week. I think it's like minus 20.
Oh, yeah. Cold stuff. I've already introduced you as the founder and the CEO of Vectra, which we want to get heavily into the business model. But I always like to ask this, what are you working on today or this week? What's sort of hot right now?
Yeah, for me right now, we actually bring on a marketing director on Monday. So that's a very exciting moment for us. So as we were talking about just before we jumped on, one of the biggest challenges in this industry is conveying a really simple, understandable message. And I think myself and our head of sales, Dan, we're not marketing people, but the last few years we've been pumping out a lot of content, and we'd now like to use that to continue to educate, build awareness across the community, and make business leaders realize that they have options to achieve their business objectives. So that's one big one. And then we're also working on a fairly significant proposal to a major corporate who is thinking about their energy transition. They want to do on-site energy, and they can't just sole source people because they have to go through a competitive process. But we are very well positioned, and we just have to tell our story in a really enjoyable, concise, and trusted way. So that's what we're working on this week.
Yeah, that's great. The elevator pitch, I guess, right? You got to be able to describe what you do and why it's incredibly uniquely invaluable in 10 seconds or 15 seconds. Well, let's dive into Vectra. I read Vectra facilitates sustainability, reliability, and cost objectives for businesses. And you just mentioned the energy transition as if everybody knows that we're about to have an energy transition or that we're in the midst of an energy transmission. Refine that for me. What is Vectra's business model?
Yep. So to your point, we specialize in commercial industrial businesses. And so I'd say the reason why I bring that up is I'd say from an energy perspective, many of us are very aware of our neighbors or even our own houses having installed solar panels, maybe even an EV charger these days. So I'd say the residential side of the market is fairly straightforward. There's lots of good suppliers, and people they're still frustrated at the process of buying a system, but they know how to do it. And they're of a value that if it goes wrong, it's not completely game over conditions. On the utility end of the spectrum, we've also become very good at deploying big solar farms, wind turbines, nuclear plants. And we've done that for many years. But then there's this massive market in the middle where every business in the world typically relies on energy from their utility or their service provider. And they're all experiencing escalating energy costs. They're all worried about energy security, reliability, outages. And they all have now sustainability commitments that they are trying to meet or they're thinking about trying to meet, and they're trying to figure out what to do. And that's a very complex landscape. We tried to solve it manually as consultants many years ago, and we realized that it's too complex. There's too many variables to consider. And to be able to impact the community at scale, we wanted to try and automate it into a platform while also providing the professional services to support that. So what we do is we support commercial industrial businesses to assess how they are going to achieve their objectives, what their specific business needs are. We help design them the optimal systems, knowing that there is never one size fits all. And then we get them firm competitive quotes in our marketplace. So this is all about supporting a customer to assess is this something I should be thinking about? What's possible? Why should I do it? What's the business case? And then who are the best suppliers in the market to go and build it for me? And so we help them build on-site energy systems, whether that be solar, wind, battery storage, gas turbines, diesel gensets, EV chargers. We're completely solution agnostic, but we help think through all the complexities and variables that go into determining whether it's a right fit for businesses.
That sounds really, really valuable. And I guess, I mean, I think I've been in the same position as you where, you know, a business is used to paying a utility bill. They're not used to hiring an energy transition consultant, right? Or a firm. In fact, they may not even be ready for an energy transition, but what's in the toolkit? I mean, obviously you mentioned solar, what you mentioned some on-site generation. What else is in that toolkit that would enables them to think in terms of transition?
Yeah, like the real powerful nature of it is that I'd say right now businesses are thinking in ones and twos. So, you know, they look at a specific facility and they get sucked into a bit of a rabbit warren of trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. And what we support them to do is it doesn't matter whether they've got one facility, 10 facilities, or hundreds of thousands of facilities. We can ingest all of them into our platform. And all we start with is an address and an industry type. And then we can pull over 5,000 different data points, ranging from fuel prices, utility rates, the solar radiance, the wind speeds, all these different variables that would ultimately impact what makes sense for them. And we want to understand for that business, what is their business priority? Is it cost reduction? Is it resilience? Is it emission reduction? How do they want to weight that? Would they be willing to pay a premium for a certain outcome? Or do they want to just beat their utility cost today and whatever other benefits they get is considered to be a bonus? But what we help them do is map out across all of those facilities, how can they achieve their objective? And for some, it's net zero by 2030. For others, it's my utility bills have gone up 30% in the last 2 years and I can't continue to handle that. So what we then do is help them determine where would they get the greatest return on investment from a perspective of deploying an on-site energy system. And most people just think about installing solar today. But as you know, Ted, like solar is amazing, but in many utility jurisdictions with different net metering rules, different demand response tariffs, that may not work. And so we help them look at all technologies holistically and then recommend what is right for them. And we consider everything from fuel cells and gas turbines to solar, storage, wind in some cases. But I'd say almost in most typical cases, it's solar storage with some other element if needed for a specific business need.
Right. And is your scope, are you across the country or do you go internationally or are you mostly California or where's your, it's a lot of variables across the country. Right off the bat.
Yep. US is definitely our biggest footprint today. We've got the most data here, the most suppliers in our marketplace. We've got over 4,000 suppliers in our marketplace that can help deliver these systems for people. And I think that's one of the big misconceptions is people think that we're not ready to do this at scale, but actually the equipment, the constructors, the developers, the capital is all there. We want to be able to support business leaders to make confident, informed, data-driven decisions, but then work with those best suppliers for their specific need, location, technology type, commercial needs. But we've worked in Africa, Europe, Southeast Asia. We've done a lot of work in Australia because several of us come out of the mining industry. So mines are obviously big energy consumers and they're typically in very remote places. We've got several priority sectors where there's a lot of traction right now. Manufacturing is a big one because of the supply chain pressures.
I want to talk to you about the wineries in a minute here, but
exactly.
It's caught my attention, but let me just ask some more fundamental questions. I had no idea that you had 4,000 suppliers in your market. Congratulations. That's a huge number. How long have you guys been around to pull this all together?
Yeah. So we launched Vector in 2019, literally right before COVID started, which is a whole nother story. And we can dig into that if you want, but we were actually working on this and thinking about it for, you know, 3 or 4 years leading up to that point manually as consultants for a company called Worley, which is the largest energy engineering firm in the world today. They come out of a strong oil and gas heritage, but I ran their global power consulting practice for what we called the renewable and on-site energy business. So, you know, we've really been incubating, ideating, building the concept of this this vision for, you know, almost 7 or 8 years now. But as Vector, under that brand and under that business, the last 4 years.
Congratulations on your rise. How many solar companies are, I'm in the solar space. I mean, there's how many solar companies are in your marketplace, and do they find benefit of joining because you've already got so many, or how does that work?
Yeah. So the benefit is, Ted, is, as you know, there's lots, but what we want to do is we want to make sure that, you know, for a customer who maybe has 10 sites across the country, the solar developer that they work with in California is not the same one that's going to be the best for them in Florida or New York. And so the reason why we have so many is we want to be able to cover all the different variables. Some people don't want to finance a system themselves. They want a developer to do it for them. Yeah. Some want solar plus storage. Some want to be able to do a gas turbine. And so what we need to do is make sure we've got the right cross section that matches the capital needs, the geographic needs, the technology configurations, as well as having different levels of sophistication. You know, some customers want to work with the tier ones. I want to work with the Schneiders, the Siemens, the ABBs. Others are happy working with Ted and his solar truck and just having the panels installed and having a very local personal relationship. And so we want to understand also the risk profile of those businesses. And that's really the power of our marketplace, is we built the infrastructure, the workflows, the request format, such that it's very easy for our buyers to say, here's what I want, here's my risk profile, here's how I want to pay or not pay for this. Here's my performance expectations, warranties, contractual requirements. And as you know, no business leaders thought about this at scale. They've never bought a system like this, so they don't know the questions to ask. So we want to remove those risks by applying those best practices to the ask to the market. And so to come back to answering your question, the benefit for the suppliers being in our marketplace is many of them spend a huge amount of cost chasing bad projects, and they are asked to do a lot of consultative work, a lot of bids, and many of them don't go anywhere. And so we've already pre-vetted, verified, configured the system. And so now they get to bid on a project that is going to happen, and they get to remove all that kind of soft cost out of that process. So then it drives down the cost for everyone. The customer gets a better deal because they're now in the driver's seat telling the suppliers what they want, instead of the suppliers trying to just sell them whatever it is that they think they need or want, which is kind of the way the market works today.
Yeah. Well, specific question then, do you charge for your initial assessment, or do you just get paid back when a deal is done of some kind?
Yeah. So we've tried both. What we find is if customers don't pay for an assessment or a platform access fee, then they don't necessarily have skin in the game. And their sort of speed to act is a lot slower. And so, you know, we want motivated, we want engaged customers, and we create a huge amount of value in that front end piece. You know, previously as consultants, we'd charge tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars for those kind of configuration studies, especially across entire portfolios. You're now looking at millions of dollars to management consultants. We've automated a lot of that work. And so if a customer has a single site, they pay an assessment fee. If they've got multiple sites, they pay a SaaS platform access fee. And then they've got a dynamic interface where they can see, what am I doing? Where are my projects are at? What progress have I made? How much emissions have I reduced? What are my cost savings? And we monitor the assets once built, such that it becomes a real-time energy transition plan. And as conditions in the market change, the platform is being updated. And so you're not working from like a fixed spreadsheet. It's, you know, exactly where you are at any snapshot in time.
So a couple more questions on the business model. You charge up front for, I mean, I'm thinking if a business is listening in on this podcast, you know, they would expect to get up, they would contact you, they'd get a proposal from you to provide an assessment of however many sites they have across however many states or locations that they have. And they would pay a fee for that. And then from that, they would end up with a roadmap.
A
transition strategy, if you will. Then do you take a percentage of the deal from a solar contractor, or do you get paid a share of the savings from the site host over time?
Yeah, we get a very small success fee from only the suppliers that win work in the marketplace. So it's free for the suppliers to be there. They get visibility of the projects. They bid on whatever they want, but they only pay when value is created. And, you know, NREL did a study that showed up to 70% of project costs today are soft costs. And so if we've compressed even a fraction of that out of the system, the little slice that we take is still a massive net benefit to all parties.
Yeah. And then no fee from the site that installs the solar system or that does the energy efficiency upgrades, or over time, you're not taking a share of the savings.
No, we don't. No, that's the power of it. They pay the platform access fee. They get to manage their strategy. They get to use the marketplace infrastructure as all part of that. You know, we are here to be a long-term partner. And so we only want to capture value where in the right spaces at the right time. And
right. You're really the facilitator. It sounds like a great, great role, really meaningful. Well, now let's talk wineries for a second. Give me a case study of a winery that I saw one on your website. So I know you've done some beautiful jobs. Take us through a case study of a winery.
Yeah. One of the great assessments we just literally finished was for for Chandon, and they're a mega winery, and we're able to look at their situation today, and their bills had gone up literally 40% in the last 2 years. And what we were able to show them with a solar plus battery storage, especially here in California with the new net metering rules, they could literally reduce their bills by over 30% and have that locked in for the next 20 years. And so, you know, when you're talking about over $1 million worth of energy costs, being able to reduce that, lock that in for the next 20 years, it becomes a very significant benefit, as well as then being able to reduce your emissions by 40%. It's super attractive business case. And especially being in wildfire territory, power outages, having the resilience of the battery, these are all critical factors that feed into the ultimate system that's designed. And so we consider many variables in that process.
Yep. Well, and okay, so let's go to you mentioned mining, and mining being a big energy user, obviously. Give us an idea of a mining case study.
Mines are great customers because they are typically in remote locations, and they're either running on diesel gensets today, or they're on the end of a very fragile single transmission line. And so that definitely plays on the minds of all our mining customers, is the power resilience, because when the plant's not running, you're not producing. And that certainly hurts the bottom line. And certainly, I think what we're seeing for industries like mining, like manufacturing, the supply chain pressures and the capital market pressures to show that you are developing your product in a sustainable way is actually mounting every day. And we're speaking to a lot of customers who are just saying, we can't even actually get past the first conversation with our buyer without showing them that we've got a sustainability plan. And miners want to go and dig a hole in the ground and, you know, develop raw product. They don't want to be thinking about that energy side of it. And so, you know, we worked on everything from rare earths mines to iron ore to gold. And, you know, we're able to show all the different scenarios ranging from 100% off-grid, renewable, down to if you wanted to continue to have your diesel gensets on site and use them as backup, what other technologies would support you to do that? You know, we did a great job with MacArthur Minerals, where we looked at several different scenarios for them. And they actually used that in their Australian Stock Exchange announcements. So they kind of publicly declared, you know, here's what we've looked at. Here's the scenarios we're considering. And once we get closer to building, we'll settle on one. But that's kind of the power of this process, is it's good for brand, it's good for marketing, it's good for decision making. And it really helps you to have those informed conversations with your key stakeholders instead of just guessing. So that's the opportunity.
Talk reliability a second. You've mentioned it a couple times, and obviously critical for industry and businesses and industry. Are you seeing the decline in battery prices and the variety of batteries available increasing sufficiently? You mentioned you're still cutting great deals with batteries right now, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one of the most common things we hear from our customers is, I'm not ready to consider batteries because they're too expensive.
Yeah.
And that's based on data that's many years old. You know, just in the last year alone, I think battery prices dropped over 14%. And so we are able to show them that here is the benefit of having a battery, even just in terms of reducing your peak demand. You know, that one line item on your bill can often, you know, your peak demand charges can often make up half of the price of your bill, especially locally. We're looking at some bills for some customers recently, and they're asking us, like, what is a demand charge? Because this is the biggest portion of my bill. So being able to just
More, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Being able to shift when you use energy, how much energy you use from the grid. These are all super critical factors, especially with net metering rules here locally for you and I. You know, if you're not going to get compensated for pushing solar energy back into the grid during the day, the utility doesn't want that energy. But if you can do it in the evening, if you can use your battery to sell energy back at those kind of peak demand times when the utility wants it, you can get very well compensated for that. So we can model those sort of things. But I'd say in general, the battery industry is hot and it's building, and there's a variety of players, you know, ranging from, we work with the Honeywells of the world, who are obviously a major brand and kind of come with a lot more pedigree and trust that they're going to be around in 20 years, right down to people who are developing new and exciting new technologies that if a customer wants to take a bit of a risk, there's some technical opportunities there.
Yeah. How did you get in? Where did you grow up, by the way? Are you UK? Are you a Brit?
Yeah. I've had definitely a wild ride myself, but yeah, grew up just outside Liverpool, England. Mum and dad were both police officers. Never thought I'd be an entrepreneur.
How did that come about?
I actually don't have a clue. It's funny because the first performance review I ever had, I have an environmental science degree and background. I love geography. Yeah. I never knew I was going to get into the industry. I wanted to be a pilot with the Air Force. They paid for me to go through university. For many reasons, that didn't work out. But after traveling around the world a lot, I ended up with an environmental science job in Calgary, Canada, supporting the oil and gas industry to clean up old oil and gas well sites throughout the Rockies. But my first ever performance review, they said, what are your 5-year aspirations? And I said, I want to run this place. I'll be the CEO one day. And they just laughed at me and thought I was crazy. but this consulting firm got bought out by Worley, one of the biggest engineering corporations in the world. And I managed to have a great career with them. And
is that what took you to Dubai? I saw Dubai on your resume.
Yeah, exactly. I've been working in Canada with a lot of the majors, the Shells, the BPs, the ExxonMobils. And an opportunity came up for me to actually go into Iraq after the Second Gulf War and support Petronas, Eni, Exxon, all move into the region. So a lot of those companies wanted to move in, but they wanted to be able to document what liability they were taking on. So we were essentially the first people on the ground living on the U.S. Army base in Basra, supported by personal protection teams. We had a former SAS guy as our security advisor. And it's super stressful. We were being mortar attacked every day. We were going out and, you know, anyone who was on a cell phone, any bag on the side of the road, they were all potential threats. And looking back, it was extremely stressful. In the moment, it was super exciting, super exhilarating. And it was a project I'll never forget. And candidly, that was probably the first time I realized the importance of energy, because here we were extracting the biggest oil and gas reserves in the world for our kind of energy hungry economies in the West. And yet the local economy was surviving on 2 hours of power a day because their infrastructure had been devastated. And so anyone who thinks our 100-year-old infrastructure here is not at risk of going bang one day, I think to your question about reliability, that's where it comes from, because the infrastructure is complex, but it's also very fragile and there's lots of single points of failure. And from then on, my mission was to provide clean, affordable, reliable power for everyone. Today, was
how did that come about, that you went from the oil and gas to the clean, reliable?
Yeah, you know, even after that moment, I still spent many years supporting the LNG industry, the mining industry, the oil and gas industry to develop projects. But I realized that, you know, many people bash those industries, but we have to be super proud of them because they've created the lifestyles that we all enjoy today. There are obviously consequences of having done that. But now we have an opportunity, and we have the, you know, 10 years ago, the technology didn't exist to do on-site energy cost efficiently, effectively. Yeah. Utility yeah. power was cheap enough. The business case wasn't there. But now we've got this, you know, merger of trends, of improvements in technology, increased digitalization opportunities, that now on-site energy makes huge sense, especially in light of kind of the incumbent solutions starting to not provide the same amount of value it once did. So I think I just realized that through a few amazing people on my team that this was a trend that was here for a long time to come. But we're not very good at doing them today. You know, we're good at doing single one-off big projects as a society, but trying to do many small projects at scale, that's what we are focused on at Vector.
Yeah. And do you think, you mentioned on-site energy a number of times, and then we've talked mm-hmm. a little bit about the reduced value from net energy metering that's at least taken place in California and a number of other states. But do you imagine some of your clients going off grid at some point?
It's really interesting, Ted. I think that's a potential in the future. We definitely don't recommend it today. You know, I think it's nice to have that grid backup. It's nice to still be a part of that community. I still genuinely believe that the future is we're all on the distribution network. I think the future is we don't have to worry about big, long transmission lines. I think the opportunity is we have lots and lots of small assets where we are generating and storing energy right where we need it, but we have the ability to locally transact it, share it, donate it, and being able to do that all through simple to use apps on our phone where we don't need to know what a kilowatt hour is. We don't need to know what a demand charge is, but we know that if we overgenerate, we can make some money, or our neighbor doesn't have the money to put on their own solar and storage system, so you can oversize yours and share it with them. I think that's what really excites me. And I think especially for businesses, it makes profitable sense today. And I think that's the story that needs to get out, is this becomes a really good hedging position for you. Instead of having to guess how much your bill is going to go up next year, lock in your costs now, take control over it, and let the market do whatever it wants, but you have complete autonomy over what your cost is going to be, and you can budget that in for the next 20 years.
Yeah, quite fantastic the way that technology has really risen in this case, so that we have this option now, and we have a very dynamic energy marketplace that Vectra will be facilitating. Now, tell me a couple things about you. Somehow in my notes, I have a 6-day race. Were you involved in some sort of a race, or is that an error on my part?
No, yeah. Several years ago, my wife and I did what's called Breck Epic. We are avid mountain bikers. And so we took on the challenge of it's already at elevation. So you're already at like 10,000 feet in Breckenridge, Colorado. And then we did 6 long days in the saddle to all sorts of different destinations. It's considered to be one of the toughest mountain bike races in the world. And yeah, we had a great time. I've got a really funny story for you, actually, in terms of, I think it was like at the end of maybe day 4, everyone had gone to bed and I was there stretching. And it turned out that on TV in the corner was like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or something. And I remember just like sat there crying my eyes out because I was listening to what was going on, but I was so emotionally and physically drained that I couldn't control myself. And so I was there stretching, crying away, Bachelor on. And, you know, they are brutal races, but we had a great time doing it. And
that's great. That's great.
I'm just about to start my training regime to try and hit a 100-mile running race in May. So I haven't run a lot recently. And so that's my big target for the next few months. And I want to use these kind of big physical activities to raise awareness. So stay tuned, and I'll probably share some news in the coming weeks.
How great. How great. Hey, listen, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ted.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.